On Sunday, January 30th, and Monday, January 31st, Mercer Ellington and the Duke Ellington Orchestra will join Peter Nero and the Philly Pops for a performance of Duke Ellington's symphonic works as well as some of his popular songs. In just a couple of minutes, Mercer Ellington will be with us on Fresh Air. One of the pieces that will be performed with the Philly Pops is a symphonic work that was written by Duke Ellington that he died before completing. The piece was finished by Mercer Ellington. We're going to hear the opening of this piece. It's called The Three Black Kings, and we're going to hear a recent recording that features the Warsaw Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Mercer Ellington. Just heard the opening of The Three Black Kings, which is an orchestral work written by Duke Ellington. We heard Mercer Ellington conducting the Warsaw Philharmonic Orchestra, and with me is Mercer Ellington, who since his father's death in 1974 has conducted the Duke Ellington Orchestra, and for the past couple of years he's also been the musical director and conductor of the Broadway musical Sophisticated Ladies, which just closed on Broadway. On January 30th and 31st, Mercer Ellington and the Duke Ellington Orchestra will perform with Peter Nero and the Philly Pops, and together they'll perform Three Black Kings, which we just heard a passage of. It's a symphonic piece that Duke Ellington died before completing. Mercer wrote the finale and took it to the Warsaw Philharmonic Orchestra for its premiere performance. The Philly Pops and the Duke Ellington Orchestra will also perform Ellington's orchestral piece, New World A-Comin'. Singer Peggy King will join the Duke Ellington Orchestra for a performance of Ellington's songs. These performances are coming up Sunday, January 30th at 3 in the afternoon and Monday, January 31st at 8. And Mercer Ellington, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much, Terry.
I'd really like to hear the story behind the writing of Three Black Kings, which you just heard an excerpt of.
You know, probably a title. Pop called it Les Trois Rois Noirs from the French, and he liked the alliteration and rhyme of it. But as we introduced it and talked around and tried to keep to the French title, the thing that seemed to take on more was this, the Three Black Kings, and everybody seemed to take that title as such, and that was it. It was an adventure that if I've ever had an uncertain moment in life, it kind of worried me because with it, practically everything else that Pop did, the extended works and so forth, we had some sort of guidance. Or if I had approached something like the Sacred Concert, at least I'd had some kind of instruction with him about how to edit it or whatever. But here was a work that had been commissioned by the Harlem Dance Theater and never performed by him with nothing to go on. It came as a complete surprise to me. I went to my usual copyist, Brick Fliegel, and to get a couple of numbers back that we had put back into the book. And Brick said, well, what do you want me to do with this stuff? And I said, well, what stuff? And he points to this whole pile of music that's sitting there, which had been done for just symphony performance of itself. So I said, well, I've got to know what it's about. And I said, the only way for me to really learn it is if we ourselves play it. So we had to have the whole thing reconstructed again. so that principally it could be played and feature the orchestra itself. Then we decided that we didn't want to go against what Pop had done, so the next thing to do is to make certain that it did house the complete orchestra. And we went to work and worked the new arrangement, that is, Luther Anderson did, and did the thing for full orchestra with the band playing with it. Witness the results from Warsaw. And it was a wonderful thing. It was the only opportunity that I had that I felt I could do the work under my own conditions. Number one, the scales in Warsaw, as you might imagine, by the economy, is much less. However, the recording facilities were terrible, and I had to order a truck from England to come into Warsaw and also send for engineers from Stockholm to come in, and they studied the rehearsals for 4 days, which was the time we had to prepare for it. And with that, we were able to fix the hall and make certain that we had absolute sound as best as was possible. In fact, they did such a fastidious job on it. We had trouble eliminating the sound of the violins turning the pages of the arrangement. But all in all, I'm so sort of glad that I did take advantage of that particular moment, and it was a very enjoyable time for us. We spent something like 18 days in Poland, and that was one of the high points of that tour.
How much of it was left uncompleted when your father died?
Not too much, but it was left incomplete, because of a fetish he had. He never liked to end a program of complete a work until the final day when it was about to be rehearsed or presented for such a show. It was originally commissioned by the Harlem Dance Theater, but there again, as is the case with another project I'm in the midst of, they became unfunded, and they weren't able to put the project on.
Was that a superstition, not finishing it till it was about to be performed,
yeah,
or was it a way of keeping
it
fresh?
It's like he figured the luckiest day in the year for him was always Friday the 13th. And he used to try to schedule openings on that day. Made a great effort to do it. And another one of the works, which had been originally beamed at public broadcasting, was Queenie Pie, the only opera he ever wrote, which is still yet to be performed. So we're working on that now. We got a government grant, and we feel that we'll have the libretto as we're changing the context of it, because we was lengthening it from a 45-minute presentation to now a full opera. And with it, we're extending it with new themes and so forth, but not by creating any new music. You must remember that Pop was in the hospital for better than a year before he passed, and during that time, he never let up. He always wrote additional music each day, and also gave a concert for the nurses and the doctors every evening at 5 o'clock for half an hour. And in this process, we got familiar with a lot of the other things he created. We're weaving them into the opera, and we expect it to be quite an undertaking, and also should be quite a production after we're finished.
How do you choose orchestras to perform the symphonic works?
Well, you don't choose them. You just take whatever break you come along and use them. And I feel highly honored that we were invited here to perform with the Philadelphia Symphony. And we've worked many other times, not many other times, but other occasions, like with the Yale Symphony, and also with the Youth Orchestra from place to place. And one of the other projects I'm in the midst of doing is to make these works of Ellington's available to whoever and wherever they would like to use them, so that it doesn't necessarily require the presence of our orchestra, but if someone would like to include a work of Ellington's in their program, we're going to have the music put into scores and printed, so that the distributor wants to take on the job, and we'll simply tell them, well, we've had a call from the Gary Symphony, which is a case in the past 2 weeks, and we'd like to have them send them a copy out and so forth.
I guess most people are unfamiliar with Ellington Symphonic.
Well, and that's it. And in order to encourage it, we don't want to get into this laborious job of renting the scores and all. And in doing approaching it this way, it'll be available at a much lesser cost to symphonic organizations, high schools, and colleges.
With the Philly Pops, for instance, before the performance, do you talk with the orchestra and discuss the score with them or Ellington's intentions?
Well, what happens is, in most cases, like, we've got the record to go by, we have scores, and we have a conversation between the powers to be, such as Peter Nero himself, which I've been in conversation with whom I've been in conversation for the last week. We've had several phone calls. He's been by the house and on his trips, and he's a very busy man, as well as talking to Mo here with the organization to make certain that our program is correct, also that we have music to accommodate the number of desks that are involved with the Philadelphia Symphony. And we will have rehearsals apart from each other and finally coincide pretty close to the performance itself and be certain that we have the work done.
Who are some of the soloists in your band now?
Well, we have Britt Woodman with the band, who is one of the originals. We would say originals, I'm talking about the band that existed in 1950, as well as Barry Lee Hall, who came up under Ellington's wing for 2 years. With that, we also have Lloyd Mayers, who is the pianist for us, and he will take on the major role of the Three Black Kings in the last part, the dirge, dedicated to Martin Luther. As well, we have Chuck Connors on bass trombone, who's been there something like 21 years. Rocky White, who's been there about the same time. We got three stars, I think, out of Texas Southern. At the same time, Anita Moore, our singer, and Rocky White and Barry Lee Hall. So with that, we have basic soloists. But our band is composed, and you know, many times people like to make a comparison between the basic group and our gang. And basic band, in a sense, is chosen because there's a togetherness and a similar school that each person in the orchestra adheres to. Our orchestra was always created because one man who sat beside the next had a completely different interpretation. And therefore, as the years went past, you know, you had Tricky Sam, Lawrence Brown, and Tizo. Now, these are three definite distinct sounds when it came to playing solos. And that's our situation here. Our tenor player, Dave Young, is somewhat under the weather. I don't know whether he'll be ready or not. But we have another gentleman who's quite capable. From the West Coast, Frank Owens.
I think in an earlier interview you told me that you did a lot of traveling at one point, listening to performers in different right. parts of the country to as a way of auditioning without them knowing it
right.
for the Ellington Orchestra. Is anybody fulfilling that kind of function now? Is there anyone traveling around listening to young performers?
Well, in a way, thanks to the sophisticated ladies, we've had the world kind of pass by us.
Yeah.
And constantly we have guys coming in from various areas, calls from the West Coast and so forth, who are interested in being in the organization. Right now, with things going well for us, we have practically the exact orchestra that comes off the stage of sophisticated ladies. And it's a band that has great technique, the best band I've ever had, and one that has also a desire and a happiness about it. We get along very well. We all congratulated each other at the end of the Sophisticated Ladies, which occurred on New Year's Day, as to having been the one job where they had been on where nobody got in a squabble with anybody else in the band.
Why do you think that was?
Well, first off, they didn't have the time to. They left home and they came to work, and when the job was over, they went straight back out, except on matinee days. But I also think that there is a sort of a feeling of allegiance to Duke Ellington, that they have a purpose, a genuine purpose, to make certain this music is played well and to do the best they can. One may criticize the other, but not vehemently, and just simply say, well, you know, when we were back there, like Britt was talking to somebody else, too, and then he'd take the figure and blow it on his horn and say, this is the way we did it. From that point on, there's no argument. It's done like that.
Were you surprised when the play closed? I had no idea it closed until you just mentioned it.
Well, no, yes and no. I had read notices in the paper that we would close in the middle of February. And the other reason for the surprise was the kind of business we were doing. We closed a sold-out house, and quite a few tickets returned. I can understand possibly the concern of our producers because the coldest part of the year, show business-wise, is somewhere in the area of January through mid-February. And when you figure that a show like that can lose upwards of $50,000 a day, it's something to be considered if you're playing to a slow house. But I think the big mistake of the whole closing of the show was not announcing the time that it was to end, because I think there are a lot of people who still wanted to see it, and they figured, well, okay, we'll wait till next week or next month and go see it. And as a result, that was it. Now, the probability is that we will, or the show itself, will reopen again in New York. But by that time, you may have to break in new talent. The other kids can't stand and wait online until they make up their minds to go back into business, and they're going to go to other shows, other careers, and so forth. And it's hopeful that when it is reorganized, it will have the same kind of talent that we have had involved before. Phyllis was excellent, and she has many things that are available to her, as well as more recent Judith. And even the cast, you know, they've got this roadmap behind them now of being in a success and performing well. And as a result, you have the past record, which opens new areas for you. And each of the kids who've left us have gone straight into another show. So you figure if you're going to open back up again, you better get ready to just break in a whole new bunch. And that's where you have to worry about being lucky in that.
I understand that there were a lot of changes from the time it opened in Philadelphia the time it went on Broadway. There were a lot of squabbles there, too, in, I think, what costumes would be best and which choreography worked best and maybe which numbers should be included also. Did you participate in those?
Well, I did some complaining from time to time. But I tell you, I don't know what it was, whether it was the Christmas season or whatever, but it was a very beautiful time to come here and a very wonderful place for us to have broken the show in Philly. Because we had an audience that was hungry for what we were doing, and those that came enjoyed it very well. I wasn't aware of the fact that we were reported to have been doing poorly until I got back to New York and read the papers. Same thing happened with the Washington audience. We had very wonderful response down there. But I was aware of the fact that we were running very long. If I remember, one of our first shows here in Philly was about 3 hours. And I'm glad that we reduced it after the experience of these 2 years of standing there and playing wall-to-wall music. And it kind of gets to you. I've begun to wonder whether I was running short of energy or just aging.
Did you have to fight at any point for what you thought was a more appropriate interpretation of Ellington's work or persona as portrayed in...
Well,
in the production?
I fought continuously throughout the show for certain things I felt were more Ellington. It was, in a sense, a very hard argument to win because what I'm trying to do is to improve on success, and that's not very easy to fight. Had we been failing at one point or another, then there may have been room for constructive criticism and also the decision to act.
Ellington is a composer whose work runs the range from being incredibly popular, songs absolutely everybody knows, to being things like the symphonic work that we heard earlier that very few people know and that probably wouldn't have the immediate appeal to broad audiences that something like a Sophisticated Lady would or...
Well, I
guess what am I saying?
I think the reason that the lesser-known works don't have the exposure that they could possibly have is due to the fact that the proper channels have not been approached.
Well, do you have, I guess what I'm asking you is, do you have faith in popular taste? Do you think that the popular taste finds the best work, or do you find discrepancies in popular taste and what you think are the greatest aspects of Ellington's?
Well, I mean, you can't deny that popular taste is a great element. I'm afraid that the meter that we judge popular taste is based mostly on dollars. But I can't deride the audience if they have the ability to want to like the simplicity of Satin Doll or Mood Indigo. There you have a combination of both. It's something that was achieved artistically and so forth. But I'm not trying to cram down something down the audience's throat like the Golden Broom and the Green Apple, which is quite an intense work. But by the same token, there are places where that can be done and utilized, and people would be happy to have it. Youth symphonies throughout the country, you know, they say, oh, this age, this is, these kids, I mean, with all this rock and roll. I have nothing to say about rock and roll. But the point is, there is a whole group of kids that are being overlooked with the great, great talent who are in the youth symphonies around the world. And they are a source of performance. And it's not who does perform your work. It's the fact that it is done. So that if you have a high school orchestra that plays it, or a college orchestra, or a band that's somewhere out there performed purely for the principle of enjoying music, I think that's success.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, how does time go that fast? All right. Well, anyhow, I'll be back here very shortly to see the folks, and thanks for the opportunity to remind them.
Thanks a lot for being here. I've really enjoyed it. Mercer Ellington has been my guest, and he'll be in Philadelphia on the 30th and 31st of January to perform with Peter Nero and the Philly Pops. So the Duke Ellington Orchestra will join the Philly Pops in performances of two of Duke Ellington's symphonic works, The Three Black Kings and New World A-Comin', and they'll also be joined for a set by singer Peggy King, who will be performing Duke Ellington songs. So that's the 30th Sunday at 3 in the afternoon, the 31st Monday at 8 in the evening at the Academy of Music. And Mercer Ellington, again, thanks so much for being here.